Joining us now, hails from Franklin County up in North Alabama. Always a pleasure to bring on Jamie Keel, a state representative from Russellville. Representative Keel, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for taking time for us this morning. I do appreciate it. Let's get right into it. This has been the discussion long, I guess we've kind of hinted at it, but doing something to protect churches, small businesses in the event of an emergency, another emergency event. But I saw your pre-filed bill. You want to put in some protections there. Walk us through what your aim is here.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody knows that back in the spring when COVID hit, obviously no one had been through anything like that before in our lifetime, and there were some pretty drastic measures taken to avoid COVID, and we know now that those were, they could have slowed it. We don't really know, but it's still spreading. You know, there's still COVID. People are still, experiencing the repercussions from the pandemic. But the businesses and churches were closed, but not all businesses were closed, just those that were deemed non-essential. And as you know, I'm a small business owner, and any small business owner's business is essential. If it's the person that owns it, it's essential to them and their livelihood. And so what I saw when I was traveling and even here in my small hometown was that there would be a business that was closed that sold clothing, for instance, and another business that was open that still sold clothing. And so, for instance, a small mom and pop boutique or even a larger company like Hibbett's that sells clothing, they had to close. They were forced to close. But another business like Walmart was open. And what I didn't think that was right, first of all, but what we were really doing was we were driving all the customers that would have been in all these other stores in the small mom and pops, the Hibbett's of the world. We were driving all those to one central location to buy clothing, for instance. And, that cannot be good for the spread of pandemic to bring everybody together in one location or a few locations. And so what this bill simply does is says that if one business can be open under certain guidelines, during an emergency or a pandemic, then all businesses and churches can be open under those same guidelines.
Well, already, I guess the Supreme Court's ruled in that favor of the religious institutions. I mean, it does seem that we were there for a while. You were going to have people having church services in their basement or something like that. It would seem totally foreign to in American history at any other time. But, it got to that. That may still be going on in some places in America.
Well, I mean, we didn't see it in Alabama, but I have a friend who's a pastor at a church in Las Vegas, and their church was limited to only 50 attendees at a time. And this is a church that probably runs, 1,000, 1,500 people. They were allowed 50 people at a time in their building, while the casinos, the largest employer, in Las Vegas, they were allowed, as long as they maintain social distancing, they didn't have a limit. That's just not right. Other businesses in California were allowed to open, bars and strip clubs were allowed to open. Churches were not. And so a lot of folks fought back against that in California. And I think it's a good time to go ahead and address the matter here that, if it's safe to be in a casino and social distance and be under guidelines, then you can also be in a church and do the same thing.
The small business part of it is interesting too, because we went through this exercise of trying to determine what was an essential business and what was a non-essential business. And it seemed like it was done kind of just out of, it was a very subjective process. There wasn't a clear criteria there. But my assumption is, or my understanding of what you're trying to do here is that wouldn't even be that would be no longer a consideration under future circumstances such as this.
Well, the fact of the matter is, all businesses are essential. Every business is essential if you work there or you own that business, because it's your livelihood. It pays for whatever your family needs. And so it is essential if you work there or if you own that business. And I think that every business owner and every business can live by guidelines. If one store is allowed to open under certain guidelines, I think that we can trust a mom and pop to do the same thing. As a matter of fact, I did the same thing. I own a small business. We sell lawn and garden equipment. We have stripes on the floor that tell folks how far 6 feet apart is. We have signage in our store that tells people which way to enter and which way to exit. We have signage at the front that says if you'd like to call this number, we'll be glad to bring it out to your car. All the things that the large businesses were able to do when other businesses were shut down, we're able to do the same thing. And so from a small business owner's perspective, it's just unfair to tell that person that they can't do what a bigger store can do, because we can, and often can do it safer. I mean, how often do you go into a small business and see 50 people crowded into that area? It's just not very often. Small businesses are just that. They're small, and not as many people are going to be in and out. And to me, it's much safer than seeing lines and lines of people at a Lowe's or at a Walmart.
Right. I mean, believe it, I was talking to somebody, maybe a county commissioner somewhere in the state, and he was saying, downtowns, they all have a furniture store or something like that. They, at any given moment, have a max of 5 people in it. But they're naturally social distancing, all the time. It's one of these places where they have 1 or 2 cells and that's their day. But whereas, yeah. It's an absurd criteria to apply this, that small business can't operate safely under the pandemic. Meanwhile, like you were saying, Walmart or Target or name your big box store can remain open. It just doesn't seem to have any kind of scientific basis.
Yeah, a furniture store is a perfect example, because it's often a large room, easy to spread out. And so you go in there, you buy a mattress or buy a recliner. I mean, you're safe in there. It's safer than going in Sam's Club, where there's multiple people packed under the same roof that are trying to buy groceries and clothing while you're trying to pick up a mattress. Much safer to go to the local furniture store to buy that than it is to a big box store.
Joined by State Representative Jamie Kill here on the program. This seems to be a bigger trend, though, that we really got to take a look at the Emergency Management Act of 1955. Obviously, it was put in place at a different time when the threat was a nuclear winter or whatever from the Soviet Union. And, it talks about air raid wardens and things of that nature. It seemed foreign in this time. Does the emergency power provision of state government just really need does it need to be tweaked, or should we just kind of consider maybe a wholesale overhaul?
Well, I think there's going to be at a minimum tweaking. Senator Whatley has a bill I know that's coming to limit the time that the governor can invoke those powers without legislative approval, and I think he's onto something there that. It shouldn't be able to go on and on forever. And certainly not this governor, but you take we don't know what the political winds, how they will change in the future. But let's say that someday that we have a governor in office that decides that, the greenhouse effect is an emergency, that climate change is an emergency. Well, who's to say that they don't invoke the Emergency Act due to that type of emergency in the future? And so those are the type of things that we need to be looking at is how wide and far reaching is this Emergency Act, and just how far can government go to dictate what its citizens are able to do during a time of a quote emergency.
Do you, you know, does, but I think you, when I've talked to you and your colleagues, they feel like Governor Ivey and State Health Officer Scott Harris, they've really acted responsibly. But what they would caveat that with is, what happens when it's not our guy or our girl in the governor's seat? And then maybe, like, what if it were Walt Maddox and, you know, the mayor of Tuscaloosa, and look at what he did to his city, shutting a lot of things down. And that could be what would be in store for Alabama if the other person got elected.
Well, I mean, we have to look around the nation. I mean, it's not very hard to see what, you know, more liberal-leaning states and liberal cities have done. I mean, they're literally killing their citizens. I mean, their citizens don't have a way to provide for themselves. I think they're moving. I think their citizens are moving from those states and coming to, you know, southern states, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, to get away from that type of repressive government. And so, I mean, it, you know, it doesn't take a long look at other states and cities to see what could happen if the, you know, the political winds changed here.
Well, and that I guess that begs the next question. With the incoming Biden administration already has appointed a coronavirus task force, and already a couple of those members going on national television talking about the need to shut down for 6 to 8 weeks to allow the vaccine to take hold before, you know, everything can be safely opened up. There is, it doesn't seem like it's out of the realm of possibilities that the state could be pressured by the federal government, and I don't know what form that may take. Maybe they try to incentivize it or offer paycheck or payouts or something, but could be under pressure to go undergo another shutdown.
Well, I mean, I guess my question at this point is, who's going to enforce it? You know, they can give orders, but if it doesn't have local enforcement, I don't think that our local law enforcement is, you know, is probably going to enforce that type of order. I mean, I don't think they have the stomach for coming in and shutting down small businesses at this point. They saw that it didn't work last time. I don't think it's going to work this time. Everybody needs to be careful, you know, wear a mask, social distance, be responsible. But a government shutdown, I don't think it worked last time. I don't think it's going to work again.
Well, let's talk about the vaccine. You know, that is starting slowly but surely making its way through the ecosystem. You know, you're in a relatively rural county. Are you confident that the state is going to be able to handle such a massive vaccination program or distribute it, you know, particularly to rural areas that maybe sometimes are overlooked?
Well, I think they are. It's probably a benefit to the system to not have the supply that we need initially. It gives us a slow rollout. And so, you know, the initial rollout has been to 15 regional hospitals, and, you know, we'll get frontline healthcare workers and those folks vaccinated first. But what that does is gives us a chance to test the system before it goes out further to the general population. But my brother's a pharmacist. They've been contacted and have signed up to administer the vaccine at their rural locations. They have three rural locations. And so that's happening throughout the state. And there is a communication system in place so that each of those locations, they're trained on how to give the vaccine, but also how to report the vaccine and to whom it has been administered. And that way, you know, that we can keep up with who has had it. You know, if you have the first shot, do you need the second shot? And if it's somebody that's elderly that may not remember, you know, they'll need, the person administering it will need to know if they've already had both shots. And so there's a system in place, and I feel confident that Dr. Harris and his staff have planned and have prepared. You know, we've had months now to do this, so there's no reason that we can't get this out in a timely fashion.
And we'll wrap it up on this pertaining to February and when the regular session is supposed to start. Do you think the vaccine will be in place in a fashion that you guys will be able to convene the legislative session in February?
I'm not sure if the vaccine will be widespread, but what I do think is that by then, you know, those folks who are most vulnerable will be allowed to take it. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that by then that our more senior members or those that, you know, are at higher risk for hospitalization or death from COVID will be able to get the vaccine. There's a number of members who have already had COVID that should still have antibodies by then, so they shouldn't be able to spread it or to get COVID at that point. And so I'm hopeful that, you know, we may have some type of herd immunity simply from, you know, getting the vaccine to those folks that need it, plus those that have already had it.
Representative, we have got to leave it there, but thank you so much for your time this morning.
Okay, thank you very much.
State Representative Jamie Keel of Russellville, ladies and gentlemen, talking about his pre-filed bill. I think you can read it on the Alabama House website if you are so interested.